From KBIA News in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations with Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. Roots and Blues and Barbecue. The annual Columbia Festival went strong this past weekend, and today Intersection is bringing you a whole show on the event. We were lucky enough to interview musicians from the Music Maker Blues Review, and you'll hear their amazing stories coming up. We're also hearing from barbecue masters and people in the community. But first, we spoke with Columbia Daily Tribune features editor Eric Danielson about how the Roots and Blues musical offerings have changed over the years.
I actually wrote about this in a column last year that I think the festival has really kind of evolved in the way that a festival is supposed to, in that in the first few years, and this is neither good nor bad, it is just, you know, what it is, that the festival was a little bit more pure as far as genre is concerned, a little bit more focused on blues and maybe bluegrass, but, you know, with different slices of Americana thrown in there. And then I think you've seen as the festival has gotten bigger and been around a while longer that, you know, you're starting to see more bands that have, again, I mean, to use the name of the festival, their roots in that music, but branch out to do more rock and roll or do different things with it. And so I think you've seen kind of just a little bit of a stretching of those definitions over the years in a way that I think is great. I think that's what a festival has to do to kind of go on and survive for the long haul. But I think you're seeing, you know, if you think of a band last year like the Avett Brothers or maybe a band this year like Need to Breathe, you know, those are bands that grew up on the music of some of the veteran performers that are there, but have kind of spun it out to do their own thing and mixed it with rock and roll and other genres. So I think that's one of the biggest things, just kind of evolved and kind of stretched out in a way that, you know, most musicians do. And so it makes sense that most festivals would.
I think a lot of people know what we're talking about when we talk about blues music, or at least can sort of hear a sound in their mind that's blues music. But when we talk about roots music, what are we talking about?
I mean, I think that's the question. You know, I think it's interesting. I was noticing on Twitter, and I wish I could remember the name of the festival now, but a few weeks ago, maybe a few months ago, there was a conversation about another roots music festival in the U.S., and some music writers were talking about, you know, what does that actually mean? Because I think typically the way that we've popularized the term, we're talking about, you know, music that is related in some way to country or folk music or maybe bluegrass. But, you know, again, the question is, which people are you talking about and what are their roots? You know, so I think you look at this year's festival, and I think you could talk about someone like Dwight Yoakam being a great example of roots music. You know, maybe even somebody like Justin Townes Earle, who's really steeped in a lot of kind of folk and singer-songwriter traditions. But again, that's the roots music of a certain amount of folks. And I think you could argue for sure that, you know, that jazz is roots music, that hip hop is roots music. I mean, this is a stretch and I don't really see the festival going this direction, but I mean, punk is roots music, depending on who you talk to. I think every individual person has different, a different definition of roots music. But I think in this case, the festival was really kind of focused on the way that we talk about it, which is kind of that Americana, kind of a, almost an, you know, kind of a seamless blend of, you know, folk and bluegrass and rock and just kind of seeing where those things kind of meet each other.
Yeah. And I, like you were talking about before, I really enjoy seeing this sort of diverse group of bands. I think we saw the Rebirth Brass Band.
Yeah, yeah.
Which has a really great sound and seems to fit so well into the festival without specifically being blues.
Sure. And all of those, you know, that's another thing that I think that they've done well is really tried to ask the question, you know, what are some of the really, some of the hubs of American music? And of course, New Orleans is one of the first things that comes to mind. And the festival's done a nice job over the, especially the past few years, bringing in New Orleans acts and, you know, Rebirth Brass Band. You think about Irma Thomas, who was here this year, who's phenomenal, you know, like 74 years old. Her voice just sounds as immaculate as ever. The Soul Queen of New Orleans is her nickname. And, you know, her stuff, again, it's, you know, it's all the musical theory. It's all, you know, there are blues scales there. There are blue notes there. But it's not, you know, strict 12-bar blues like maybe you would think about it. It's mixed with soul. It's mixed with a little bit of funk and gospel. And so, you know, again, everything is kind of going back to this mother tongue. But there are these great variations that people, you know, all based on their culture and their experiences and their, you know, the music, that the little snippets they hear here and there around them and, you know, bars and on the street and in different places. And so it's been kind of neat to see some of those other cities and those other cultures kind of overlay into Columbia for the festival and get a little bit more of a taste of what that experience is like.
The Music Maker Relief Foundation, formed in 1994 to, as you can read on the organization's website, preserve the musical traditions of the South by directly supporting the musicians who make it, ensuring their voices will not be silenced by poverty and time. It does things like help artists book shows, record, and tour. Some of the musicians associated with the organization were in town for Roots and Blues, and Intersection sat down with them. Now let me say that each of these people deserves his or her own entire show, but we did our best to bring you pieces of that conversation. Artie Dean is a drummer, musical director, and longtime part of Music Maker. He tells us about meeting founder Tim Duffy.
I met Tim before the foundation was just starting. He was with that first Old Blues Man. They needed a drummer. He called me, and I showed up and played at a Pizza Hut for $50, and that was 20 years ago. I'm still here. That's the short story.
And you must have met some amazing people along the way.
Yeah, the actual artists we have. This man sitting next to me, Albert White, you know, he played with Sam Cooke, and, you know, Little Joe over here from Chicago, sitting right here, played with B.B. King. I mean, those are the coolest people to hear their stories, because there's a lot of hours going down the highway in a van or riding in an airplane, and all of a sudden you'll hear this jewel that you didn't hear in the magazines. Part of the joy of being with these guys. They've all got fantastic histories.
And how is Music Maker, sort of what's your role with the organization today?
Musical director and then board advisory member, but still the drummer. Now, I've produced a lot of records. I was nominated to produce. I didn't have much experience, but a mentor named Taj Mahal helped me, got me started, told me what to do and what not to do, and coached me and guided me through my first several records. And then one day he said, "Artie, you don't need me anymore." He just says, "You got it." I said, "Oh, I don't believe it. I graduated."
Guitarist Albert White told us about the very early days of a career in which he went on to play with musicians like Ray Charles.
I formed my own band in high school, but I worked for a company, Lanier Worldwide, for 35 years. So I was off and on, going out, coming back, and then going to work this morning. So I stayed with them for 35 years, and when I retired from there, I was still having my own band, doing a little college work and little nightclub gigs and all that. So, you know, it's been wonderful. It's been the ups and downs, and especially back in the 60s, when we used to travel the road in the 60s, it was kind of rough, but we made it.
Were there any specific moments that you remember as being particularly rough then?
Yes, one particular moment I remember, I will never forget it. I was coming out of Greensboro, North Carolina, and we stopped at a rest area to get some rest, and everybody went to sleep, and I'm a light sleeper, so I woke up and kind of focused, my eyes focused to a light down in the woods. And so as I started clearing my eyes and trying to find out what was this light, it was a fire, and it was a Ku Klux Klan rally. So that's when I never forget it. So we woke everybody up, and so we left there. You know, it was so that's particularly I would never forget.
Yeah, that sounds terrifying.
Yeah, yes. Because I was young, I was still young. I was a teenager, so and I had to have the permission from the principal and stuff to go out on the road and stuff when I was with my uncle. So.
And your uncle, Piano Red, was he sort of your main inspiration to become a musician?
Yes, I was at his home one day, and his son had a little toy ukulele, and I picked it up when I was making some type sounds out of it. And I didn't know he was standing in background listening. And so I heard him go in there and tell his wife, said, "That boy's in there making some sounds out of that thing. I think I'm going to send him to my guitar player that plays with him and let him teach him lessons." So every Saturday, he would call a cab for me. And a cab would pick me up, take it to the guy's house, and come back within an hour and pick me back up and take me back home. So I took lessons for that for about a couple of years or more.
Big Ron Hunter, also known as the world's happiest bluesman, will sing you a sad, sad song and make it sound so sweet. He told us about his life philosophy.
They call me the happiest blues man in the world, and that's because there's no sadness in me. And if there's any sadness in me, I overlook it. I let it go. You know, I smile, either laughing to keep from crying. You know, and so, and it's all about love. And that's the main thing. And that's what I do the blues music for, is to share love. And I have a message. My message is that we all love one another. And if we're not, it's not too late to start.
And how did you start playing? Your dad was a bluesman?
Yes. Well, he played blues and he played country music and bluegrass music. And so I wrote a song called Make That Guitar Talk. And the way I wrote it, my dad used to take me out on the porch and he'd say, son, sit down and let me teach you how to make your guitar talk. And so we would call and answer each other on the guitar. And he says, if you learn how to play it sweet enough along the way, you might pick up some little chickadees along the way if you play it sweet enough. So, and then he also said, if you learn how to make it talk, you'll be able to play with anybody. And so my dad is right. He's right. You know, I can play with anybody and not be afraid, you know, to play with them and just whatever I hear, I can play. And I have learned to read a little bit, you know, so I can keep up.
And you've got a bunch of people here who are each really unique and strong musicians in their own right. How do you all get together and make something together?
That is, well, some folks would say magic. I would say spiritual and experience, creative. That's what I like about the whole thing is being creative, being original. And so that's what I like. Each and every one of us is different, but we put everything different together and we come out with something sweet.
Now we have three more great music maker interviews coming up, but right now we want to show you that we haven't forgotten about the barbecue. Intersection producer Daniela Vidal has this story on barbecuing for hungry festival goers.
Rex Scott never planned on opening a food truck, but his friends at Lincoln University in Jefferson City couldn't get enough of the 15 different spices he uses to season his jerk chicken, so they convinced him to start a business. And 10 years later, Scott continues to grill his signature Jamaican dishes, jerk chicken, curry chicken, and beef patties. He says his chicken and the blues share quite a bit in common.
In relation to the blues, I would say our cooking is as much experimentation and art form and amalgamation of different concepts to make something that is uniquely ours.
Scott has been a vendor for the Roots and Blues and Barbecue Festival since its start in 2007. He prepares close to 1,000 pounds of meat for festival weekend. His motivation for all that prep work?
The people. I like the fact that it's kind of like you have a community out there.
Community isn't the only thing out at Stevens Lake Park this festival weekend. Memories are there too. Patrick King has been to the festival every year since it started. He makes it a point to stop by the jerk hut each time.
My family goes to Jamaica all the time, and it's just our chance to get some jerk chicken down here, you know, back in the States.
Just a few yards away from the Jamaican jerk hut, the smell of traditional barbecue wafts through the air. Welcome to Smoke and Chicks Barbecue. They've been a part of the festival for 9 years.
It's tender. It's got a lot of flavor. People love our sauces. We take good care of doing our product well.
That's Chick Orlson, the owner of Smoke and Chicks Barbecue. The slow-cooked pulled pork keeps the lines long at his tent. It's not an unfamiliar sight for Elizabeth Leva, Orlson's niece. She's worked at Roots and Blues for 4 years now.
Beer and barbecue, can't go wrong with that.
For Intersection, I'm Daniela Vidal.
Now we're back with musicians who played with the Music Maker Blues Review this past Sunday. Here's Pat Mother Blues Cohen, whose stage presence is unforgettable, telling us the story of how she lost everything and struggled to get it back.
I am a Katrina, Hurricane Katrina survivor. And I worked in New Orleans, and I worked steady, and I was familiar with everything there. And then Hurricane Katrina hit. And what a lot of people don't realize about Hurricane Katrina, I lived in the Ninth Ward, so physical things, I lost everything, like clothes, and I had a small sound company, all of my equipment, everything. I had jewelry that people used to give me, I had like all sorts of beautiful diamond rings, gold bracelets, diamond bracelets, just a lot of really nice stuff. And when Katrina hit, they took everything. But those were the things that it didn't bother me so much that they took that than me losing a part of my life. All of my gigs, I worked for 13 agents down there. I worked for 13 of the top event agencies in New Orleans. And when Katrina hit, I came down to visit my brother. And when I tell you I lost everything, I mean I lost everything. I had a pair of flip-flops and two outfits. And I was in an area where I didn't know anybody, so displaced. That's what being displaced is all about. Not knowing anybody and not knowing where anything is. I didn't know where musicians were. I didn't know where clubs were. I didn't know who was hiring. I didn't know anything. And I was just in a rural area. So I found this job in Winston-Salem at this club. I think it was called the Speakeasy. Yeah. And I was playing there. And, Ron, Big Ron, used to work across the street. And, he would come through there and he saw me and we would chat. And, we became friends. So he says, I'm going to this thing this weekend, and you should come meet this guy. He helps musicians that are in trouble. I said, I'm in trouble. He says, well, come, come and meet this guy. He needs to know who you are. So I went down there, and I met him and Michael Vine and... Captain Luke and Whistling Britches and he actually paid me for that, and he paid me good just for coming out and doing a couple of tunes with them. And I was like, wow. And I needed it at the time, so I didn't hear anything else from him for a while, and out of the clear blue one day he called and said, you want to go to Australia? We have a job in Australia. And that kind of turned my life around, because what happened is I met more music maker people. And now everybody is like family. It's like I've known y'all forever. We're all like family. And just like any other family, we have our ups and we have our downs, but we get back together and we're family. It's like a big old family. And that is how he helped me, not just by the gigs, but he gave me another family, another musical family. So that within itself is priceless.
Lil Joe Burton brings a ton of energy to the stage with his horn. He told us about his first club show and about how he later met music maker founder Tim Duffy.
And how did you start playing music?
I started when I was about 9, and the purpose of that was I lived in the projects of Chicago, and it was a deterrent to keep me out of gangs stuff. And I got to liking it. And about a few years later, I ran into this guy. You know him as Junior Wells. And he was going to this club called the Blue Flame. And I had my horn and I was peeping through the window because I was too young to go in there, of course. And so he said, "What you doing, boy?" I said, "I want to go in there and play my horn." He said, "Well, come on in here." I said, "Well, you know, they won't let me in." He said, "Just wait a minute." So he went in and the guy that owned the place, his son played there as well. And his son was about my age. And so Junior told him, he said, "If you don't let this guy come in here, I quit." And they let me come in, and that was the beginning of my relationship with Junior, and which off and on, I stayed with him for about 10 years or more until he passed away. But in the mix of all of that, then I also played with some other people, Joe Tex and Bobby Womack, Lil Milton, and then I went on to do a nice stretch with B.B. King, you know, and... Then after that, I did some other things, but I'm going to kind of speed it up a little bit to how I ran into Mr. Tim Duffy. I was playing with this guy, Mudcat, in Atlanta. And Mudcat was almost like a co-founder of Music Maker. And you know, and him and Tim, great together. And this is like, so he introduced me to this, you know, and Tim. And then I needed a hip replacement. And who do you think helped with the hip replacement? Music Maker. All right, y'all, get out, you know. So that's my connection to Music Maker. And I've been here, maybe about 15 years now, something like that. So, you know. And it's a wonderful family, like Mother Blue said, and the people are just splendid, excellent.
Last but not least, we talked with bassist Nasheed Abdul of Music Maker. He sort of disappeared into a back room while we were doing these interviews, but his bandmates brought him out because they wanted to hear his stories too.
It was very lonely in the country, and I actually had to start playing guitar. I learned, my mother bought me a guitar, I think, for one Christmas. And I learned how to tune it, and basically just listen to a radio. And basically learn songs from the radio, basic country songs, basically, just how I learned, really. And then, for some reason, I started working, actually, she had to sign papers. I started working in the clubs very early, before I was old enough to work in the clubs. But they had people who assigned for me, and I could work with older people. And so I had a good ear, you know, and that's for me training myself basically in the country, really. Yeah.
And where did you grow up?
In Valdosta, Georgia. Mm-hmm. Valdosta, Georgia. It's a small town in the southern part of Georgia. You know, and it's a, you know, I learned, like I said, mostly country music, but I also learned the blues there too.
Do you think your mom wanted you to be a musician?
Well, you know, I think she's proud of it now. I think it did initially. I don't think no mother probably want you to be a musician. Musicians. But in any event, you know, I think she's really proud of it now, and the fact that I have basically seen most of the world, things that she probably, you know, wished that, you know, other people could see, and herself also. But it's a roller coaster life, you know. You got to have the ability to withstand good times and hard times. That's why I'm proud of these guys and all of the lady here, because it's not unless you've just been blessed. But most of these guys come through the hard way, you know. Yep. And so I understand what they go through. So the love and the sincerity, I think that is the crucial aspect of any of these guys, I should say. That they have went through some hard time to get to where they are today, so we respect Music Maker because they are the one who is actually bringing us together. We can all probably perform by ourselves, but it's beautiful to be able to come together and just have fun and really love each other and spread that love.
Thanks so much to the musicians from Music Maker for sitting down with Intersection. I honestly don't think you'd find a nicer group of people to talk with. Now, for our final act, Intersection's community outreach team was at Roots and Blues talking with concertgoers about their very first show.
My name is Madison Green, and I was born and raised in Columbia, so I've lived here my whole life. I'm a townie. I actually didn't go to my first real concert until I was probably 27. We went and saw Group Love together in Kansas City. Yes! And it was just so, like, electric, and I was with my best friends, and it was just to see everybody be so excited and be there all for, like, one thing and be, like, united and happy for it and just rocking out. It was awesome.
My name is Eric Wessel. I live in Columbia. My parents, when I was a little kid, took me to the Temptations.
Oh, nice yeah. one.
And
better than New Kids on the Block.
I don't know what to say about that, man. It was pretty cool. I vaguely remember parts of it, you know. I remember it being very loud, and I remember the guys on stage, like, they were wearing, I think, blue suits, and they were dancing a lot. And that's about what I remember.
My name is Judy Curd. Oh, and my first concert in my life was at the Missouri State Fair in Sedalia, Missouri. And it was Michael Jackson, the Jackson 5. And so that was a big deal. I was probably 12, you know. But to be in Sedalia, number one, and to be a black artist was just amazing to be at the Missouri State Fair. So it was really exciting.
My name is Laura O'Neill. My first concert was in 1982, and it was Adam Ant and the Romantics. It was fun just to be out and with my friends on that first experience and have that and be with all other teenagers. That was the first time. I loved it.
Thank you for spending your time with us here at Intersection, Conversations with Our Community. I want to thank our producers, Katie Eisterhold and Daniela Vidal, who make our world go round, and our community outreach team of Helen Tien and Kara Tabor. And of course, thank you to our guests, Eric Danielson, Artie Dean, Albert White, Big Ron Hunter, Pat Mother Blues Cohen, Lil Joe Burton, and Nasheed Abdul. Our music is Montana Skies. Please join us next week at 6:30 p.m. on Monday for conversations on the state of dental care in Missouri. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection, right here on KBIA 91.3 FM. And here's the Music Maker Blues Review Live taking you out.